name is Jade and I'm an alcoholic. Happy to be here. So in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're taught to share, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And since it's a transgender panel meeting, we're kind of gonna wing it. So, you know, being transgender for me doesn't have anything to do with me being an alcoholic. I want to make sure I'm very clear about that. Being transgender just happens to play a part about how I feel about myself and how I felt about myself growing up. What makes me an alcoholic is the fact that once I start, I can't stop. So it took me a really long time to differentiate those two because I was so caught up in the sense of, you know, circumstances and physicalities that make me why I am the way that I am. I've come to believe and understand that being an alcoholic is just something that I have. And the way that I deal with that is I attend meetings regularly. I sponsor women. I have a sponsor. I work the 12 steps and I continue to work my steps. And so those are things that I do to stay sober. One of the things I think that was really huge for me when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous was it was a sense of vulnerability in learning how to own my truth and how to be myself amongst those that I did not know. Back in the day when I got sober, it was like my first time getting sober. And mind you, relapse is a part of my story. So if you're here, that does not have to be a part of yours, but that is a part of mine. And for me, when I originally came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know any other transgenders. I didn't know that there was anything, a group or a meeting or anything like that, that where others would go. And for me, I received nothing but love and kindness from the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the things I remember distinctly was, it doesn't matter what you are, you're an alcoholic, and so you're welcome here. And I felt that very much so. And I think that type of compassion and love is what really made me continue to keep coming back and stay around through a lot of those different relapses and experiences. And I'll tell a little bit about, you know, kind of what that looks like for me. So I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I learn about the 12 steps. But I wasn't 100% ready to take the steps. You know, I got a sponsor, I did the whole shindig. And one of the things that I've learned over the years is you don't get to talk sober and behave drunk and stay. And that's one of the things that I learned through experience, through coming from where I came from. It's kind of interesting that I think about it. I remember, you know, coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and then getting sober and then having these behaviors that still stuck with me for a really long time. I was a prostitute when I was younger, and that was, and I didn't do it necessarily for the money. I did it more so for the validation and attention, and that carried on in my life when I became sober. I continued to do that behavior, and eventually that behavior took me back to using. And then, you know, throughout the years, you know, I would become a little bit more willing and a little bit more willing. And then life would happen, you know, experiences, people die, people get married, babies are born. And I think for me, like, it comes down to a point of working those 12 steps and being willing to be willing to do what's required to stay sober. Sobriety is not just intended for the good moments of my life. Staying sober is not just for the good moments of my life. It's also learning how to do that during hard times. And that was something I was unfamiliar with. I was not familiar with dealing with shit as it came up. I was not familiar with being honest. I wasn't familiar with telling people how I was feeling. And so learning how to be authentically okay with being myself. And I think I struggled with that for a really, really long time. Just because I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and had transitioned really early in my life when I was about 18 years old, didn't mean I was in full acceptance of myself. It just meant that I was willing to try something that I had never done before in hopes that it would make me happy. And what I found is that there's, throughout all my life, throughout all of the shit and things I've allowed myself to go through, my drinking and using and the depths of where it took me, as I got sober, I'm learning how to remove those things that used to hold me back from being my most authentic self. And I'm trying to find myself again, trying to find my way back to myself by removing all of those shit, those things that kind of kept me spiritually sick for a really long time. And I know that it takes a lot of courage for not just anyone who's transgendered, but for alcoholics in general to walk into these rooms. And it takes a huge sense of vulnerability. And I understand that vulnerability is the thing of doing something and not knowing the outcome. Coming into a place and not knowing how it's going to turn out and hoping that this could work for you. And I know that for myself, I didn't know if it could work for me. I was terminally unique for a really long time. I played the card that I was so different that you don't understand. It wouldn't make sense to you. But the people I saw around me in Alcoholics Anonymous that were incredible examples of this program, they work the program. They went to meetings. They sponsored people. Their talk matched their actions. And those were the people that I wanted to model my sobriety after. I've had many, many amazing sponsors throughout the years who have loved me unconditionally and at times didn't know how to support me through my sobriety with the transgendered issues or the things outside. And I believe Alcoholics Anonymous works perfect for my alcoholism. However, I have outside issues and things that I struggle with that I had to go and seek outside help for. And part of that is what has allowed me to, this time in my life, be able to have an amazing recovery. You know, I'm deserving of amazing recovery. I have 2.5 years sober. I have an amazing job. I went from being a prostitute to being a corporate trainer for a utility company. I have my family back in my life. I have the ability to walk through some really, really hard things today and not go back to drinking and using, which is phenomenal for me because that was the only thing I knew. You know, you drink when you're happy, you drink when you're sad, at least you think you do. And really what it comes down to is you're trying to calm a craving that's beyond your mental control. And I didn't know why it was I kept doing the things that I did. And I think it really falls under the first step, which is knowing that the only thing that is for sure is that I will drink again. If I understand that, then that means I'm willing to do whatever it takes for me to not. Go to meetings, work with my sponsor, work with my sponsees, be of service, and continue to build that relationship with my higher power. I think that's one of the probably the most amazing gift that I've ever received is the ability to have a connection with a power greater than myself, where I feel like I belong. I think one of the biggest things that I struggled with was human connection. The ability to fully feel like I could be myself and allow other people to see me for who I really was. And I think that's something that I craved. You know, I hear a lot of alcoholics share in their meetings about how they always felt like they didn't fit in, the lack of ability to have that human connection with other people. And I relate to that on such a high level. And I feel like, the more that I work the program and the more I worked my steps, the more I understood that I'm not so much different than what I thought that I was, that we still struggle with the same disease and we still have the same issues, emotional, mental trauma, past history, bad choices, all that shit. Nothing, you know, you sit with your sponsor and you're sharing your four step and everyone always shares, like, it doesn't surprise them when other people share things in their shares about it. It's just knowing that, you know, you're not alone. And I think that was one of the most amazing things. And when I developed that relationship with my higher power, I felt like I wasn't alone anymore. That gaping hole of misunderstanding and not knowing how it was I was gonna walk through some hard things. I got married in sobriety. That was a really bad choice. If you guys ever decide to get married in recovery after a small period of time of knowing a person, let me just share my experience and tell you that's not a good idea. Then the other thing is to run away to another state with them to start a life where you have no recovery foundation or base. So it was really more, it was the best learning experience that I could have had. I think I find throughout my life that I have these moments where my higher power smashes these ideals that I had in my life about things that I could never do. I could never get married. I could never have children. I could never have a great job. I could never do this or that. And then my higher power smashes every single one of those every single time and gives me the ability to grow through those experiences. And I'm grateful for every single one of those because they've allowed me the opportunity to share my experience with these two amazing women that came into my life. For those of you that sponsor people, it took me about a year to find these sponsees, and I raised my hand in meetings, and these two women just gravitated towards me, and we were from completely different walks of life. And as I worked the steps with those women, I got to understand why it was that I went through exactly every single thing that I went through. And I got to heal from that process by walking with those women through their pain and through those 12 steps and helping them to be the vessel to help them find their higher power. That's probably one of the greatest gifts I've ever received in sobriety is the ability to be that vessel and carry that message and help other people. Because for most of my life, I thought that I was extremely useless and that there was no point and that I had nothing to offer. And that's been proven wrong again. My higher power does for me what I cannot do for myself, constantly over and over and over. I'm grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and for the ability that I have to be united and have that connection with all of you just from the single facet that I'm an alcoholic and so are you. We may not have any other thing in common, and that's great. But that one thing, I know that when I go to meetings and I hear the message, and sometimes when I hear you share in the space between me and you, that's sometimes where I hear God. And that's sometimes where I hear the message that I need to hear to help me to continue to walk this path of sobriety. I know that I want to be the most authentic part of myself. And I know that that's not going to happen. You know, there's who you think you are and there's who you really are, and who I think I am and who I want to be is not who I am. And so it's working through all that stuff to find myself back to that carefree little kid that I was with. I used to ride bikes when I was little and I used to laugh a lot. And I used to be super, super wild and dance and lay in the sun and count the stars. And that little kid was fucking awesome. And then somewhere along the way, I lost it. And I started to grow up and become something that I wasn't. And now through working the steps and continuing to grow in my life, I'm slowly but surely finding my way back to who I am supposed to be. I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and for the amazing gifts that it has provided me in my life. And most importantly, Alcoholics Anonymous was the back door to the relationship with my higher power. And that's the most important thing that I ever got. And I'm so grateful to be here, and thank you so much for listening, and you have a great day.
Thank you, Jade. At this time, please help me welcome Kyle.
Oh, no. Ellie's going to go up next.
Emmy? Emmy. I apologize. Yeah. Help me welcome Emmy.
Hi, Hi everyone, my name is Emmy. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, you have it. Thanks. Thank you. That was great. That was great. And you know, it's really, really always an honor to participate in my recovery. You know, I've been sober for a little over 11 years, and you know, I'll tell you a little bit of what it was like for me, what happened, what it's like today, and like where like being transgender fits into that, just in my experience. So, you know, yeah, I was born a boy and I was always felt like very different. And, you know, you hear about people in alcoholism being like, oh, I feel like I never fit in. I feel like, you know, I felt very different. I felt this and that. And yeah, that was me. But, you know, you have this other extra layer of things. And like she said, like, it's not what makes me an alcoholic. It's just part of my story. And the feelings, you know, it's about the feelings. And my parents were not available. They were, you know, they had me when they were 14 and 16. Like, my mom was 14, my dad was 16. These are kids having kids. And, you know, quickly they became addicted to heroin and they were never there. So my grandparents stepped in to raise me. And I've been reflecting on this like a lot these last few days because my grandfather just passed away on Wednesday. And, you know, you start thinking back of all the memories that you shared. And because my grandfather, you know, took this little boy, me, and you know, showed this little boy how to shower, how to do their hair, how to tuck their shirt in, how to wear cologne, like those kinds of things that I, when I transitioned, I put in a file of like, do not ever open again, you know? And because like, you carry like the, like for me personally, I carry the shame of like, oh my God, I'm different and I don't belong and this and that. And so up until recently, like this was a topic that I never really wanted to address, you know, because I grew up in a very Mexican family, very tough machismo kind of stuff going on. And so like for me, like the word transgender scared me growing up. Like I would hear the word and I'd hear about these people who had, you know, crazy experiences. Like I watched this documentary and I just, to me, it just went like, felt like I was going against the grain. I was going against Catholic Catholicism, like this very mean God of like, be fearful. And so I grew up with like lots of shame knowing that, I think I knew since I was a kid, and it's just something that I buried and I blocked and I did not ever want to address. I got sober and I was still a male. And I, once, you know, you start doing the work in the program, it was after I did my fourth step, you start to, you know, uncover, discover, discard. And I realized who I really was, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Like, am I gonna kill myself? Am I gonna run away? Or am I gonna drink again? And I decided that, you know, I had a second chance at life getting sober and I was gonna do what I was meant to be. And I did, you know, I started very slowly in my transition. I think I was about a year and a half sober. And I started, you know, going to see the doctor and getting all this stuff ready. And I didn't know anyone who was transgender either. You know, there was this woman who had like 8 years of sobriety and I reached out to her and she gave me like a cold shoulder and I was like, oh my God, like my world crumbled because she was the only person that I knew. And I was like, okay, I guess I got to do it on my own. And I did. And I started this journey, this path, you know, still being very active in the program. I was very involved. But then I got into like my head too much and I'm like, oh my God, what are my friends going to think about me? You know, I got sober in gay AA and I would go to a lot of meetings and we do a lot of fellowship and it was like fun. And they taught me everything that I know. You know, I started my foundation in the Fellowship of AA. So what I did, you know, I know how to run away really well. So what I did is I ran away. I stopped going to AA and I went to a sister fellowship. And as I started my journey into womanhood, you know, I was going to these other meetings and I started secretarying and still being involved because I was like, what are they gonna think? And it was like a couple months later that they noticed that I was gone. They reached out and, you know, they knew. They knew me really well and they knew, and they're like, you know, there's tradition 3 that says that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. We love you no matter what. Don't be silly. We miss you. Come back. And they held me through, you know, this path and they loved me. And yeah, I'm so grateful that I did because it was so hard. And I remember just feeling so shameful about it. About a year into, About a year into like my transition, you know, I met somebody in the rooms and I started this relationship, and it was a very toxic relationship. And you know, at this point, like I still was stronger, like, you know, because you lose your strength as you take like more estrogen, you start losing your strength, your muscle starts decreasing. And so I still was very, you know, he'd hit me, I'd hit him harder, like he'd punch me, I'd punch him harder. I, you know, it was just like very toxic. And then I was also going to school at the same time, because I, you know, I wanted to become a better person and get a degree and all those things that they talk about in the program. So I was chasing something, and he told me, if you leave, I'm gonna kill myself. So I didn't go to school, right? I put my education on hold because I was like still like not using all the tools in my toolbox that I was using at one point. And so like I put everything on the back burner for someone else. And then when that relationship failed, you know, I ended up going to college, getting my degree and all that. And then I can relate to these feelings of like not feeling good enough, like strong enough, thin enough. I have that not enoughness, that tape in my mind saying that I'm not ever enough, right? And always trying to measure up and all of this, like, yeah, that I'm an alcoholic. And so, you know, I felt for sure I was gonna be alone for the rest of my life. I'm like, nobody's gonna want me, because the last things that this guy told me is, you're just a fat tranny who's never gonna find anyone to love them. And I sealed that, and I sealed it like here in my head, and I'm like, oh my God, he's right. You know, and I was so scared. I was so scared, but I believed that. I believed that voice that told me that for many years. So, you know, I'm doing this thing, I'm going to school, like, and I'm just like not very happy, right? I let go of my program, I let my guard down, like, and I stopped going to meetings because I have now moved from like San Diego to Los Angeles, and I'm like with this group of girls, and that's the thing. I'm put into this group of girls and they have no clue. So it's like, okay, I'm fitting in with them. So then my friends who knew me in San Diego, like, they know, but they don't know. So I'm like, how long can I get away with it? And I got away with it for a long time, and, you know, and it was a disservice to myself to not be open about it, because it drove me to like wanting to kill myself. And, you know, we were in the rooms of recovery and we worked the steps because we want freedom from the bonds of self. And I just, that shame, it just, I carried it for many years, and I didn't want to, you know, be pointed at, looked at, talked about, judged, gossiped about. Like, that was all like fear that I had inside of me. And so, you know, I met this, you know, that's another thing. I got into another relationship with someone, and he's like, you are never to tell anyone. Like, if my parents ask ever, deny, deny, deny. And so just add on to that layer of shame, you know, that relationship ended, whatever. And I was still in school. I graduated. I moved more to like LA, Hollywoodish, and I came back, you know, after being dry for a couple years. I was dry, I was miserable, and I came back after being dry. And I walked into this young people's meeting, and then people welcomed me, you know, but still I was like unwilling to look at that, you know, that shame. And I heard this woman share in the program and in the women's meeting, and she had this freedom about her, this calmness, and I asked her to sponsor me. And she asked me to do a lot of things. Like, she asked me to like go to a lot of meetings. She asked me to get commitments. And, you know, I started doing all that. And after working with her for months, after doing my fourth step again, she's like, she's seeing the patterns, right? This shame. And she's like, honey, she's like, I know the shame that you're carrying. And I know what it's like to feel it. Because she had been married to this man, and she was living a double life. She was lesbian. And she just, you know, she knew that she could relate. She knew the feelings were there. And she's like, I want you to start with three people. Pick your three people that you feel safe with, close with, and I want you to talk about it. And that was like my journey into like chasing this, to becoming free. And what happened is, you know, once I told people, started telling people, it was like, they're not judging me. They're not loving me. I mean, they're loving me. They're not judging me. And they're not gossiping about me. They're not pointing at me. And I got into this other relationship, maybe not that long ago, maybe a year and a half ago. And, you know, he was very adamant about, you need to tell people because this is going to set you free. This is going to set you free. And, you know, as soon as we started dating, he called his mom. He's like, Mom, I'm dating a transgender woman. And, you know, that was the best thing that he could have done for me, because he, you know, he gave me like this ability to like start talking about it. And like when I met his family, there was like no secrecy, and it was like so free and so loving. And you know, he was of service to some point until he was gone, and that's okay. But now it's so crazy the way things unfold, right? Like I'm asked to come and speak on in a trans panel, and I say yes. Like 2 years ago asked me, and I would like, hell no, no way, there's no way. But you know, we get to be of service, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's giving me an amazing life. Just recently I started working on this feature film where I came on as a consultant, because it's about someone who's transitioning and somebody who's gonna, you know, go through this path. And that's just like a miracle. I'm like, I never imagined that would be like what I'd be working on or doing something. And I'm really, really excited. And, you know, like I'm reading the script like a couple days ago, and I'm like, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is so wrong. You know, and that's why they brought me on, to give like my perspective and like my experience. And because, you know, the person who wrote it is not transgender. They don't understand the feelings that we go through and like the challenges that we face. And yeah, I'm just so grateful that I get to, you know, walk a path of freedom. And you know, I love being an Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. Every day is like a work in progress for me. Another, you know, I love that you touched on like the connection to your higher power, because that was me. Like I came in, I didn't really have like a connection to my higher power, because I had this like fear of God. Like, you know, for sure I'm gonna burn in hell because I'm different. And through working with my sponsor has, you know, helped me build this connection. And there's, you know, every morning I wake up and I turn my day over to my higher power, you know, and ask for thy will be done, not mine, because, you know, sometimes I get like self will run riot, and that's just what happens. I know now, like, I get to be of service to a community, you know, the community in the program, community in the transgender community. And, you know, I felt so scared of that always, because I didn't want to be that person, you know, like, I didn't want to be that person that people pointed at, or like, and my sponsor sister reminds me, you know, you get to be a role model, you get to be of service, and that's why I do it, you know. And there's been so much like relief internally for me, because I don't have to carry that shame, because eventually it's gonna take me out. It's gonna take me out. I was getting to that point, you know, where I just wanted to like die, and I didn't want to be alive because I didn't feel like normal. And it's crazy, I sponsor women in the program, and it doesn't matter, you know, because I'm there to take them through the 12 steps and the traditions. And I'm not there to like, for other things, you know? And it always surprises me, like when I'm sharing at a meeting. Also, like, this is my first time sharing in a panel like this. So like, I usually like share in a general way what it was like, what happened and what it used to be like. So I'm kind of like winging it too. But like, you know, I share my story about, you know, my journey into alcoholism, and people come up to me like, you know, biological women that say, me too, you know, and that just tells me that we share this common bond, like we speak the language of the heart, and it's about the feelings, and it's not like the external things. So anyways, thank you for letting me participate in my recovery. I think I'm done here. Thanks.
Thank you, Emmy. Now, at this time, please help me welcome Kyle.
All right. My name's Kyle. I'm an alcoholic. Let's see here. Thank you both for sharing. Got it. You know, I was coming here thinking I'm going to be, you know, sharing with all of you, so perhaps you can all learn a little bit about being trans and whatnot. And I'm sitting here thinking, my God, I'm healing through this, just hearing these stories. You know, like I can relate a lot with your story, actually, in certain ways. And so I was born female, and I transitioned to male, 7.5 years ago. And I have to share this funny story. So, you know, I've been physically appearing as male, for all intents and purposes, for the last 6+ years. And this guy, a couple of years ago, he asked me to sponsor him. And And he got to know some people that I'm friends with, and they had told him, they said, hey, you know, oh, Kyle's great, he's awesome, you know, did you know that he's transgender? And this sponsee said, he's transgender? And they said, yeah, and he said, Kyle doesn't seem like he wants to be a woman. Because he thought that I was like in the early, like I really am going to transition to be a woman now, you know what I mean? And so he's just like, really? He's like, I just don't see it. And anyways, it was really funny. But yeah, so I mean, I pretty much got sober. My sobriety date, I got sober in 1993. So I got sober when I was 23 years old and have, you know, kind of grown up in young people's conferences. So I'm really thrilled with the state of Arizona on so many levels, even though we're so backwards on so many issues. You know, young people's AA and just having a panel workshop like this regarding being trans in recovery is kind of forward thinking. I mean, I got sober back east, and I think the Northeast is actually a little behind on the trans stuff compared to the West Coast in my experience. But anyways, I got sober in straight AA pretty much. I was a female at that time. I was out as lesbian for 20 plus years in sobriety. You know, but that being said, I wasn't really around gay AA much. I was mostly around straight AA, got sober through, you know, most of my friendships long-term were people that weren't LGBT. And so when I transitioned like 7 years ago, you know, I really immersed myself in gay AA. I mean, I kind of hit out there, you know. I mean, I was so embraced and so supported in gay AA that I really withdrew from mainstream AA, you know. And what happened for me in the last couple of years is I just began to feel really isolated, you know, not being connected with the broader AA community that I originally got sober in, you know. And I had a lot of friendships with people that, long-term friendships, you know, that, you know, I'd appear at, they haven't seen me in 6 or 7 years, I appear at a meeting now and I see them, but they don't see me, you know, they don't recognize me. It's created, you know, some loneliness and some things that I've really had to push to work through, you know, but a lot like what was shared, you know, I can kind of blend in, you know, I can go to straight AA now and be, have people that I'm friends with or get to know long-term, and I could potentially have them not ever know that I'm trans, you know. It's relying on myself to out myself, and that's something that I'm having to work through, you know. It's, in some ways I feel like it's easier to just, like, you know, I can sort of hide behind the thing of like, well, what does it really matter, you know, we're all alcoholics, nobody needs to know my gender stuff, you know, and that's not why I'm here in AA, you know. And there's some truth to that, but there's also some debilitating fear and shame when I'm hiding in that place, and I actually have fear of people knowing, you know. Then I'm going backwards, I'm not going forward. And so I've had to really look at that stuff recently, because it's something that I'm having to kind of push through and be sure that I'm being transparent about who I am, you know. So anyway, yeah, and I guess also along the lines of what was shared is, I don't think my alcoholism is necessarily tied in with being trans. I mean, there's alcoholism in my family, there's mental illness in my family. I mean, I grew up, you know, with this disease, and I think whether I was struggling with gender identity issues or not, I have the physiological compulsion to drink and to just fade out and not be present for life. I mean, that's just my natural instinct, is to just not want to be here. And you know, I don't think that makes me any different. I think the other aspect too is that, you know, in many respects, and this, if I'd heard somebody say this when I was like a year or two into my transition, I would have been like, God, I don't agree with that. But now that I'm well into it, I kind of do feel this way, is, you know, on some levels, I mean, this is kind of like what I did externally. I did it on a personal level to match my insides with my outsides. But from a spiritual perspective, it was just kind of a costume change, you know? I mean, it was like changing my outsides a little bit under an illusion that that was going to fix me on the inside. And I can say that, you know, a lot of the struggles that I've had, I still have them, you know? It wasn't a magic pill that, you know, made everything go away, you know? And I think that for a little while there, I kind of thought that that would happen. I thought, well, this is the answer to all my fucked up, this is my answer to me being fucked up, you know, is to just transition and that'll just take care of practically everything, you know? And that hasn't really been the case. I mean, I think that I'm afforded the luxury of now being a kind of on a level playing field with kind of the majority of everybody else in the world, which the majority of everybody else, you know, perhaps, you know, takes, naturally doesn't have the issues that I have, you know? So today I do get to have a body externally that aligns with how I feel internally. And that puts me in on an equal ground with the majority of people in the world. And that's a pretty good feeling, you know? And I, you know, I'm grateful for that. But it doesn't cure the spiritual malady, you know, it doesn't cure, the feelings of that I can suffer from, of feeling apart from, feeling different, you know, those sorts of things. I mean, I have to continually kind of work through those things, you know, just like anybody else does who suffers from this disease of feeling different, you know. Let's see, what else? I kind of feel like through their stories, in many ways, it kind of shared my story, you know, and a lot of the feelings are the same, you know what I mean? That their transition looks different, but the feelings are the same. And it's really important to me, too, to be connected with other people that are trans in recovery, you know? I think I sort of fell under an illusion a little bit, like, well, I'm no different than anybody else. I'm just an alcoholic like everybody else. And yes, there's truth to that. But also, I need to be around people that kind of do understand some of these issues, you know. And fortunately for myself, there are people here, you know, who are female to male that are sober and that I have connections with, and it makes a big difference for me, you know. It makes a huge difference because there are some things that, I mean, I right now have a sponsor in Tempe. He's a old school guy, straight dude. You know, and he doesn't understand these issues, you know. I mean, he understands my alcoholism, but he doesn't understand these things, you know, and he acknowledges that. But I do need to go somewhere and get connected or be connected with people that do, you know, so that is important to me. But anyways, yeah, I guess, honestly, I nothing else is really coming to my mind. I mean, I somehow, by the grace of God, you know, I've stayed sober through all this. I think it's a huge undertaking to do. And, you know, I am grateful that I had my sobriety, you know, a foundation of recovery intact. And I know that that's not everybody's story. You know, some people transition before they get sober. And you know, that wasn't my story. But I do know from my own experience that this was much more stressful than I thought it was going to be, you know. I mean, the things that, you know, the name change, the gender identity, the gender change on, you know, your driver's license, you know, having to find doctors, you know, having to find surgeons. I mean, this is not for the, you know, the faint of heart. I mean, this is a big deal, you know, and, you know, going through three surgeries sober, you know, I mean, that's stuff that, you know, I think it's wise, you know, for somebody newer in sobriety to get a foundation a little bit, you know, because there could easily be a relapse on pain pills and stuff like that, you know, and for me there wasn't. But you know what? I mean, at 20 plus years of sobriety, you know, I had a buddy of mine in recovery come with me to my surgeries. I even at 20 plus years, I didn't trust myself to have my pain meds. You know what I mean? So I let him keep them, you know, and he had them the whole time we were in the hotel room. And I think part of why I didn't trust myself with that is because if I'm clear-headed, you know, I know that it's not a good idea to take more meds than I'm supposed to be taking. But if I'm not clear-headed, like I have an opioid in my system and I'm in pain, right? I mean, my natural instinct is to like, fucking give me something, you know? So, you know, it's, time is an illusion in AA. I think being sober, the length of time you're sober, I think can be your biggest delusion, you know? I think it can be the biggest delusion of people that have been sober a while, is that I have time, you know? And somehow that puts you in a place more insulated from relapse than somebody that's new. And the scary part about that is your ego gets bigger the longer you've been sober, you know? So it's much easier to convince oneself that I got this, you know? And that's dangerous. That is so dangerous. And I'm grateful for whatever reason, you know, that there's still an aspect when it comes to my disease and addiction that I don't trust myself fully, you know, and that's okay. You know, it's not a lack of confidence or a low self-esteem. It's that I have a grave respect for the disease that lives between my ears, you know, and that I can't trust myself sometimes in certain areas. So, anyway, I would love to open it up for questions, and I guess I'm just going to cut it early. And thank you, everybody, for coming. I really enjoy having people come to stuff like this. It lifts my heart that people want to learn and evolve in their own thinking. So thank you.
Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate that. And at this time, we will open up for questions. Anyone? We can all jump at once, that's cool.
I'm Shelby, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Shelby.
I don't have questions, because I'm going through the same thing. I've only been out of 2 years. They have all my life, because I remember when I was 10, making bell bottoms that were like the Power Girls. Everybody thought it was just a normal thing for a boy to do. But I've kept many secrets. I found out my accident 2 years ago when I tried killing myself with heroin. I hit my bottom and took off one day looking for meeting meetings. It took 3 days and I walked into jails. I came out about a year before. I got tired of hiding and I didn't care. I was a bald old man with a floppy hat that said Sunday Monday. And women's clothes and a goatee, and I swore I'd never shave. And I walked into jails. They said they had one, but it was for clients only. I cussed at them all, walked out. The next day I sucked it up and apologized to her. I said, what's it take to become a client? So I waited for an intake, and during my intake, the woman had asked me why I was dressed the way I was. And I told her how I felt. And she says, oh my gosh, you're transgender. I never heard the term before. I grew up in a military family. We didn't talk about stuff like that. And here I am, 58 years old. I said, honey, I told you I'm not gay. I like women. And she goes, no, 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 no. And she explained to me what it was. And I cried right there and welcomed it with open arms. She thought she upset me. It was apologizing left and right. I said, you don't understand. You just answer all my questions I've had all my life in those simple words. I've been sober ever since. It's been a blessing. God blessed me when I didn't have a God. And I guess God was saying it's time you found out. I don't have money for this. I don't know how I did it between March of last year or April of last year, October of last year. two more sponsees this morning that I just shared in a meeting about the sponsees I have. I don't even know how many I have. I'm still waiting for someone to call me. And I picked up two more. That's my life today, helping others. Acceptance. Something I wanted to touch on around the surgeries and pain. I told my surgeon about my addiction, and I told him I didn't want any narcotics. In fact, I asked, can you do this on extra strength aspirin? And she said, SoCal. And basically, that's all she gave me. I took three, woke up that next morning, and I'm going to do this today without it. And I did. They were going to give me a week off at work so I could recuperate. My surgery was Thursday. I showed up to work Monday, and I've been back ever since. It can't be done. I used to consider myself trans, and I don't even say that word anymore. Not that I feel it's a bad word, but I'm just Shelby, and that's what this program has taught me. I count myself, I know who I am today.
Thanks, Shelby. Question?
Just a real quick comment. I just want to say thank you so much to you guys. And the reason I say that, so I have a cousin right now, he still identifies as a boy, but he's a bachelor transition. And I just always want to know what it's like, you know what I mean? Because I'm the one he says he trusts the most, you know what I mean? When he first came out, he went to me. And I always support him in anything. He was like, you want to be make up artist? I was like, come on, be best thing, make up artist from that, you know what I'm saying? I was like, whatever, you know what I'm saying? Do whatever you want to do because you're like, nobody else can do that. Our parents can't do that. It's just you. You know what I mean? And the thing is, he gets to a point, a place where, you know, kind of, he's kind of, you know, going a little far left and far right with his views and stuff. But I don't really judge, you know? But I want to be there for the day that he is to a point where he's ready to come and move and ready to. And if he wants to get sober, he decides, you know, he has his disease. I really want to, I love coming into these panels because I get to see what it really feels like internally. Because I have my own internal battles, like bipolar and things, you know what I mean? So when it comes to this aspect, I don't know what it is, you know what I mean? So just to get closer to him, I feel closer to him just by listening to you this year. And I really do appreciate it. Because it really gets me a better headspace. Like knowing like, all right, I got somebody I can introduce you to. You want to come out to California, you want to do this right, come on out. You know what I mean? I can help you get to where you need to be, where you want to be, you know? So thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, at this time, please help me thank all the panelists again. We have Jade, Emmy, and Kyle. And if you'd so like, you can circle up and we'll go to the street.